then you'll take it away. We went to a conference last weekend in San Diego, and I was just telling you, I like it when I cry, because it's just, I'm so moved by God, and when the tears dry up and I'm sort of dry and all of that, that's not a great place for me. So we're at a conference and everyone is speaking. Anyway, a gal from New Zealand spoke about having faith language, that we speak with God's promises, declaration, and expectancy. And I fell apart. Like, I was crying where my belly was going, and I was so grateful. God convicted me of my language. Is it a beautiful language to Him? Am I hopeful? You know, how do I sound to God? Is it a sweet aroma? You know, what is it doing to my health and those around me? I was so convicted. They brought me to the green room, and I got to sit next to Jillian Cameron. But I thought that would be good news for y'all to hear, that while we're still kind of mama and papa the house, listen, I stay on the potter's wheel as much, if not trying to do more than you guys. I never, ever, ever want to stand up here and act like I have it all together. I really don't struggle with that. But I really don't, because I was Catholic, right, Susan? And I mean, he just got me off the street, and y'all said, good, and we've gone with it ever since. But 32 years later, anyway, so Joe goes, Nancy, call it beautiful language. So I was going to make a little teach, and he goes, Nancy, you're not the keynote speaker. Just relax. Just tell the girls what you're going through. So I said, I can do that. Anyway, I was thinking of why I love Lynette and why she's here. She has the most beautiful language always. It's so life-giving, so encouraging. She just taps right into your heart, and we get going. I mean, didn't we just have so much fun from the airport?
So much fun.
Well, I did. Anyway, we love you. I adore you. I just honor you and bless you. And she has beautiful language. And so let's just, what do we say? Give it up for you. I love you.
Love you, friend.
Thank you, worship team.
You guys were great. Oh, so good to be back. How many of you have I met before? How many have we been together before? Oh, just sort of a portion of you all. Well, I absolutely love your church. I adore Nancy and Joe. They've been our friends for many, many years. And to come in tonight and see this beautifully redone building, it was beautiful before, but what an honor, what a privilege. It's always such a joy. I love Dallas. So many beautiful women. Whenever I come to Texas, I think this is where the beautiful women live, is in Texas. It's always so beautiful. Jill is here. Jill, I can't believe you're here. The very first time I came, Jill picked me up and we became buddies. Oh, Jill, I'm so happy you're here. That warms my heart. Oh, that's your daughter. Amazing. Anyway, so, most of all, though, I'm glad you're here, because I've been thinking of you and praying for you for many, many weeks. That is one of my favorite ways to prepare to speak somewhere. I've been speaking now, goodness, 25 years, I guess, in various forms and fashions. But my favorite way to prepare is not so much, where are my notes and what am I going to say, but Lord, what do they need? What are they hungry for? You know, anytime you're around Nancy Martin, as you all know, everything is beautiful. It's fluffy, it's cupcakes, it's snacks, it's just, there's a lot of feminine beauty and fun and lipstick and, you know, all the things that she's known for. And yet, so often I think when I come to do something like this, it really just feels, and maybe you relate to this, it feels like bringing two fish and five loaves. Don't ever doubt what God can do with two fish and five loaves. He loves to take what you have and make it feed many. And so that is my hope for this weekend. As Nancy and I have been talking through, Milena and the wonderful team, about how we could make this a beautiful weekend for you, for the beautiful conference, we have come to this moment. And so I'm really excited about it. We're going to do some things tonight. I really want tonight to be a time of ministry, really letting the Lord open up your heart. And tomorrow morning in the session, I'm going to do a little bit bit more of what I do in the corporate world. I've had the honor of working both in the Christian world and in the corporate world. I've had about a 30-year corporate career, and I do lots and lots of speaking in corporations. I do teaching and workshops. And so tomorrow we're really going to focus on, tonight's going to be about letting go. How do we really let go? And tomorrow is going to be about how we lay hold of the dreams that God wants to birth in our heart. And so tomorrow morning, I don't want you to miss it. We're going to be a little bit more practical. I'm going to get into a lot of very practical tools, the techniques and the plans and purposes that I've used over my career in really helping many, many people advance their dreams and really get to that next place that you want to go, both personally, professionally, spiritually, and in every area of your life. So that'll be tomorrow morning. But tonight, we're going to dig into a little bit more of a time of ministry. I brought a few resources with me. I am passionate about resourcing women in particular. I'm a very how-to person. When I hear about what you're up to, I want to hear how you do it. I like to get tools and techniques and strategies from other people because I hate to think that I'm going to do exactly what you've done and make all your same mistakes. I want you to help me do it better if I'm going to follow in your footsteps. And so that's why 10 years ago when I published my first book, never expected to be an author, but the Lord put that dream together. And so my first book, Climbing the Ladder in Stilettos, is really a how-to book on how to know your purpose and live your dreams. Chapter one is how to write a purpose statement for your life, how to really figure out why you're here and what you're really called to do in life in an articulated way, not in the broad stroke, here to further the kingdom of God. Yes, of course, we're all here to do that. But within that calling, what is our purpose? How do you find it? How do you tangibly figure that out? And then all kinds of chapters in the book on how to find the mentors you need in a day when mentoring seems to be old-fashioned. It's not, but there are creative ways to do it. How to really find the friendships that you need to advance your dream and to do it better. How to overcome the difficult people in your life. What to do with the dysfunctional people that come along our way. How do we incorporate those kind of challenges? Whole host of other things are in that book, Climbing the Ladder in Stilettos. By the way, after tonight and in the morning, I will be out at the book table to meet you, to sign books. If you want to give it as a gift to anybody, I'd love to personalize it for them as well. My second book, which came out, I guess it was 5 years ago, is called Remember the Roses, How to Hold Out, Hang On, and Marry the Man of Your Dreams. I'm going to share a little bit about my journey in that vein of my life, but I did not get married until I was 42. And I have a real passion for the over 40 million Christian single women in America, over 18, 40 million Christian single women. Most of them feel like they're the only one. It can be lonely, especially in a church setting. But I have a passion to equip those women on how to drink in your season while you are single, because there are gifts in every season. We know that, right? And so this book was written on that. It's the first third of the book is about my journey of walking and all the ups and downs and things that happened to me along the way and finally meeting my wonderful husband. The middle part of the book is what I call gifts and lessons from the journey. Things that I look back and I realized it was a gift God was giving me. So things like the gift of sexual energy. Well, I wanted to be living a pure and holy life before the Lord. But what do you do with sexual energy when you are waiting for God to answer your prayer? That is a very practical question to be asked. And so I love to dialogue about that, and that's in the book. Other questions like that, how to make the most of your season. And then the last third of the book are excerpts from my journals through the years when I was a prolific journalist and I wrote all of my emotions. Do you know every emotion you'll ever experience, the Word of God is rich with verses and tools and stories that address those emotions. Things like, I'm mad at you, God. Anybody in here ever been mad at God? I'm jealous of all my friends. I don't feel beautiful enough to get my prayer answered to find a husband. All those emotions and all the verses the Lord gave me through the years that go with that. So if you know anybody at all who is just needing a boost of faith for their single journey, then that might be the book for them. And I have a special ring that goes with that. A designer out of New Orleans told me she'd heard my story and wanted to design a ring that exemplified that road with the roses. And so the ring is out available too. It's a gorgeous pewter ring. And a lot of people buy the book and the ring together as a set for some of that they know. My website too has a lot of tools on that. I'm going to get into that a little bit more tomorrow, but let's dive in tonight for the message and for what God wants to do in our hearts. As I was praying for you this afternoon in the hotel room, I had a couple hours all by myself. I was single for many years, as I said, and I traveled for my work, and I used to feel really lonely in hotel rooms. I'd be like, this is such a crock. I can never come to my hotel room with my husband. You know, I'm single. Well, now go into a hotel room by myself. It is like, ugh, it is a little piece of heaven. So, but I was using the time to pray for you, and I started getting a picture, and I a lot of times ask the Lord to give me a picture to help me understand what he wants to do. And here was the picture, this is what I heard in my spirit. He said, I want to stir them. And right away, the picture I had was kind of a beautiful cappuccino, and you know, you put your little spoon in and you start stirring, right, when you get the milk on the top. And the Lord said, no, that's not how I want to stir them. And I said, oh, okay, Lord, what is your picture? What do you see? And the next thing I saw so clear in my spirit was a finger on a Vitamix, and the Vitamix just started stirring, right? Very different than the cappuccino, right? So I've been praying over this ever since I felt this word stir, and here's what I believe the Lord wants to do. I believe the Lord wants to take ingredients that have been going on in your life. I make smoothies almost every single day of my life. I do, and I love a Vitamix. But what happens with a smoothie and a Vitamix is you take, this morning, the broccoli sprouts, the cucumber, the carrots, the kefir, the powders, and you put it in, and when it's done, you don't see any of those ingredients. You see something beautiful and new. And I believe this weekend, ladies, God wants to stir you up in a way and begin to reveal to you, as I'm sharing and as things are going on this weekend, a new view, a new picture, a new dream, a new stirring, a new hope, a new faith at possibilities of what God could do by taking all those seemingly random things that we go through and who we are and making something amazing and beautiful and nourishing for the world. Anybody here open to that? I always say, Lord, just mix it up however you want to mix it. And he's great at that. So that's what I'm expecting that he's going to do. We're going to do, as I said tonight, we're going to talk a little bit about this first component of dreaming big and bold and beautiful. And that is this concept of letting go. Anybody have to let go of something lately? Yeah. Letting go is not my thing. I am not a good let goer at all. I keep my clothes for all those years. I keep things. I keep things. And so letting go is not a natural thing a lot of times. Big things and little things, it seems that the letting go never ends. I was pondering the things I've had to let go of in my life, and maybe you'll relate to some of these, okay? So we've got a little chart. I'm just going to share with you a few of my own stories, and maybe you'll relate to some of these. First, the first letting go was the timing of God. The timing of God was my first thing that I've struggled with over my life. Now, I mentioned to you that I got married at the age of 42. When I grew up in a Christian home, my parents are strong Christians. I've loved Jesus every day of my life. And what a gift that is. When I was younger, I wished I had a testimony. And I didn't feel like I had one because I've always just sort of walked the straight and narrow. Anybody else like that? Love Jesus most? And I'd get into my youth group and they'd tell these dramatic conversion stories and I'd be sitting there going, I don't really have a story. Well, the older I got, the more I realized that it is a story of being kept by God. And that is a great story. And so I go off to Christian University or Roberts University in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I never dated at all in high school. Didn't know why. Felt kind of rejected by that. But just my mother was like, the Lord is keeping you. He's got a veil over you. And I was like, thanks, Mom. You know, I mean, you know, how sweet mothers. But then I go to Oral Roberts University, and it is a Christian university. There's 2,000 men, 2,000 women. That must mean there is one for everyone. I just thought, my husband is on this campus. I knew it in my heart. I just had this sense, my husband is here. He is waiting for me. My sophomore year, during an afternoon nap between classes, I had a dream. It was a very vivid dream. I don't normally remember my dreams, but I remember this one. And over the next few days after I woke up and remembered this dream, I started writing in my journal, and I simply said, Lord, are you trying to tell me something? Here was the dream that I had. Some of you heard me share it before. I saw a road, a brick road going along, and there was a woman walking on this road. It struck me because her vision was absolutely enamored by something at the end of the road. She was walking along very determinedly, Alongside the road, about a yard apart on each side, were planted single long-stemmed roses, about a yard apart on each side. Every once in a while, I noticed that a man would come up to the side of the road. He'd pick the rose. He'd hand it to her, but she would never take the roses. She just simply kept looking straight ahead, staring and walking very determinedly. Before long, I saw a road coming in the picture that looked so much like hers. Same twists, same turns, same stones, just looked like her road. And on that road was a man. He was walking along the road, and like her, he was determined and looking at the very end of the road, not distracted. The roads got closer and closer together, and before long, the two roads became one, at which point they never turned to look at each other, but he simply reached out his hand and took her hand, and in his right arm was the hugest bouquet of roses I had ever seen. And as he took her hand, he handed her the roses. They never turned to look at each other, but now they kept walking arm in arm, hand in hand, down the road. They kept walking down the road, looking straight ahead, and before long, they come into this glorious garden, full of every fragrance and type of flower, and it was just beautiful, and it smelled amazing, but the most dominant thing was that the presence of the Lord was in this place. And I saw his glory shining on them, and they stood before the Lord, and their faces were up. And I heard the Lord say, "Well done, good and faithful servants. Enter into your reward." Now, as I'm journaling over the next few days, and I'm remembering pieces of this vision, here's what the Lord begins to say to me. He says, "Lynette, I've called you to a road of my choosing, and I want you to keep your eyes on me. Along this road, at times, there are going to come good men. They'll have good things to offer you, but I don't want you to be distracted by those things. You just keep your eyes on me, because at the proper time of my choosing, I've appointed a man who's walking the same walk as you, has the same calling as you, and he is going to come into your life at the appointed time, and when he does, he will not distract you from me, but he will strengthen you, and he will have all those things that your heart desires. And the two of you will walk together from that point forward, and you will do my work, and you'll fulfill my call. And when you finish your work on earth, you'll hear me say, 'Well done, good and faithful servants.'" Well, I was excited about this vision. And I'm at Oral Roberts University. I'm like, okay, I get it. Like 4 years, I'm going to be a senior for, and that man, and you know, it's like, it's going to work out. Have you ever had a dream that the Lord has put in your heart? Whatever kind of dream it is, about a relationship, a job, a financial breakthrough, getting over something you're struggling with, whatever it is that we're working our way through, and you get a sense of something God's promised. We see it in the Word. Maybe we get a word from somebody. And of course, we think this is about to happen, right? Because God spoke to me. But the timing of the Lord was so different than what I had planned. It was not at all what I thought. So I graduate 3 years later, no man on the road with the roses. I did have my bridesmaids, and that was good because now I at least had part of my vision planned. But I graduated from school, I went on, and I started my career. Now, my career path is another area where I've had to let go. So I worked a couple years in the community, went back to work at Oral Roberts University, and I took the job, took a pay cut, and they said, "We're going to make you the alumni director in probably about a year and a half, but right now you don't have the experience. We're going to make you assistant alumni director. But if you hang in there, Lynette, we're grooming you, and you're going to become the alumni director." Well, within that first year, the woman that hired me, who had made me the promises, she'd been there 17 years, she leaves the university. You know the verse in the Bible that says the new Pharaoh did not know Joseph? Well, the new alumni director did not know Lynette. And so they gave it to this man, and actually he had another full-time job at the university. So as I always say, on the day he became the alumni director, I really became the alumni director. But no title, no accolades, no rank, nothing that it mattered to me. I'm a real justice person. I feel like if you do the job, you need to get the... That's just how my makeup is. And now I knew God called me to that job. But 5 years go by, 6 years go by. Then that man left. Now I'm still the assistant alumni director. Really the alumni director. But I'm got the title and the job. And now this man's leaving. And so I marched myself right up to the provost's office. And I said, "Dr. Hamilton, As you know, I was promised this position and I've worked really hard and I love the university, but I think it's my turn and it's my time. And they gave it to someone else, another man who had an already full-time job. So took another about year and a half to 2 years, and finally, I was named the alumni director, alumni and public relations director. And to be honest, at that point, I didn't even care anymore. My career path, goodness, I went to New York City on a word from the Lord, still waiting for that man on the road to the roses, still believing he is coming any, I mean, Valentine's Day would come, I would buy myself a dozen roses. I bought myself flowers year after year after year because the timing of the Lord was so different than what I thought. And the career path looks so different than what I thought. What is it in your life right now that you've had to let go of the timing of God? I mean, goodness, if we took the microphone around the room, every single one of us in some aspect of our life would say, the timing of the Lord has not been what I thought. Can I get a witness? Anybody? Just not been. I mean, all those years, not only did I want to get married, I wanted to have children. My very best friend, Tony, who I met at ORU, she's still my very best friend. She has 10 children. One at a time, out of her very fruitful womb, as I call it. I mean, Tony had 10 children before I was even getting married. And I would, every month, I would just lay hands on myself, and I'd be like, oh, Lord, keep me fresh and green. Just keep me green, Jesus. I mean, I would pray because the timing was ebbing. And, you know, they say the biological clock. I knew what that felt like. Why wouldn't God answer my prayer? Why wouldn't he come through? Finally, when I got married to my wonderful, amazing husband, Ron, we got married 13 years ago at the age of 42. Wonderful gift from God. And I mean, we met in New York City at our church up there. I was living and working in New York, and 9/11 happened. I should have been in the middle of the whole thing. Every morning, I walked through the World Trade Center to get to my office. I worked at Deloitte for 8 years, and every single year I was in a marketing role there at Deloitte, had different marketing positions for the years, but the one thing I did was plan marketing meetings with our teams. And there was only one meeting in 8 years that there was not room in the World Financial Center for me to have that meeting. I tried for months to schedule that meeting, and it was on 9/11. Instead, finally, we all threw our hands up and said, we'll just go to Hartford, Connecticut, and have our meeting up there instead. And so on the morning of 9/11, I hopped in a car service at 5:30. I almost didn't go because I had laryngitis. I was leading the meeting, but I went. And 3 hours later, while the rest of the world looked on, we all sat in that little conference room and watched those towers fall. God knew. See, the timing of the Lord is letting go, but it's also letting God have his way. Just 2 Sundays ago, I was coming back from church in New York, and I was rushing to get to the airport to fly back to Raleigh, and I was in a cab, and I needed him to drop me off. I was in my high heels. My feet hurt so bad, and all I needed him to do was just take me around and drop me off, and he refused to take me to my door of my apartment. Instead, he wanted to turn right, and I was so mad at him because I was in a hurry. And did you ever have those moments? And he dropped me off and I didn't tip him. And I was just so frustrated. And I ran upstairs and I threw my stuff together and I came down and I called an Uber and I hop in this Uber car and she takes me to the airport. And it was as if we were having a revival in that Uber car. She is a total on fire Christian. Her name's Debbie. She goes to another church in the area. She does Uber car as a ministry. She loves it. It's how she meets people. She's got all kinds of other things going on. We had a come to Jesus time in that car. She shared about her son. We prayed for her son. It was powerful. It was anointed. I got to my plane on time. It was great. And you know what the Lord said to me as I was walking to my flight? He said, Lynette, sometimes I need to slow you down. And how do you expect me to do it? See, he had to slow me down from Mr. Unwilling to drop me off so that I could be perfectly timed to jump in that car with Debbie, the Uber driver. Yeah. Thou thousands of Uber drivers all over New York City, and it was Debbie at that moment. See, right now, ladies, right now, God is lining up some powerful things for your life. Hallelujah. I just feel it right now. He is lining up some powerful provision for you, some breakthrough moments, some divine connections, some revelations that he wants to unlock in your soul and in your spirit. And what has seemed slow is actually so beautifully being written, being woven, being created, being crafted. Do you ever make a stir fry? When you make a stir fry, you cut up the vegetables, you turn the stove on, you throw it in, and you begin to cook. But when you make a crock pot recipe, it is slow cooking, right? You put all those things in the morning, you just barely turn a button on, and by the end of the day, that meat is just falling off the bone. See, so often, we are in a culture of comparison. I look around and I saw all my friends getting married, all my friends stealing all my wedding ideas for their weddings. Seriously, taking all my great ideas. I'm like the Martha Stewart of the bunch, and I would just always be talking about my wedding, and then sure enough, they're taking my ideas and getting married, and oh goodness, one night I was in my bed getting ready to go to sleep, and I heard my roommate Kim out in the living room, and her fiance Greg, they were out there, and I heard them play a Twyla Paris song. Anybody remember Twyla Paris? She had this one song. It was not a wedding song, but I was going to have it at my wedding. And I never told anybody because I thought I better save this one. And I heard Kim and Greg out there playing that song. And then they played it again, and and I thought, she's going to play this at her wedding. They were working on their wedding. And I lay there in my bed, and I was so discouraged. And here's what I heard the Lord say. He said, Lynette, I am the God of all creation. There are songs that haven't been written. There are ideas that have not been implemented. And if you will invest in the joy of your friends, when it is your turn, you will not be denied. See, some of you, you're in a season right now. Maybe the very prayers you've been praying for your marriage, your children, your finances, your dream that you have in your heart is happening right now under your nose with somebody else who maybe doesn't even deserve it. Now, I say deserve, not in the true sense. That's how we feel at times, doesn't it? Like, I would think, does Tony deserve 10 children when I can't have one? My thinking's off. But that's how we feel so often. Anybody relate in here? I'm just telling you how it works in my soul. Thus began my journey in my single years of just pouring out my ideas, pouring out my help, giving all the baby showers, giving all the wedding showers, just pouring it out, pouring it out. Do you know something? When it was my turn to get married in New York City, there was a guy in my church who had come off crack cocaine. Ron and I had prayed for him one week. He was radically delivered, totally turned his life around. And when we announced to the church that we were getting married, he came up to us and he said, I am an event planner, as you know. He planned the wedding of Rupert Murdoch and Catherine Zeta-Jones and Michael Douglas and all these. He'd done their weddings. And he said, I believe the Lord wants me to give you my services for free. I want to help you put this wedding together. And so I gave him my little budget of, you know, stuff. And then he went to work, and he called out favors from Broadway, and we had Broadway singers at our reception. We had a Cirque du Soleil woman fall out of the ceiling. She was throwing rose petals out of herself. I don't know. We didn't know where they were coming from. I mean, I walk into this thing, and he said to me, now, if I'm going to do this, you have to let me come up with things that you're not going to know about. I told him the vision of the road lined with roses, and that morning I did not know that he rallied half the church out in New Jersey at a warehouse, and all they did was take those 2,100 roses he ordered from the rose farm in South America, and they put together bouquets, and they had them all along the pews of that beautiful Calvary Episcopal Church in Manhattan, and when right before I walked down the aisle, they went down to the end of the aisle, and they took this white carpet, and two ushers began to unfurl it, and rose petals just falling out of the carpet. I mean, every time, I feel the chills right now, because I'm telling you, when God gives you back what you let go of, whatever you let go of, always call it a seed. See, that's what I started to do over the years. I said, okay, God, I'm letting go of something right now. Lord, I want that promotion. I believe I deserve to be alumni director. But God, more than that, I deserve, not, I don't even deserve to have a place in your kingdom, to be serving at this amazing university, Oral Roberts University, God, whatever it is, greater is one day as a servant in the house of the Lord than 1,000 elsewhere, is what David said. And when my heart began to change and I started letting go of my ideas and my definitions and my needs and my demands and what the paycheck needed to look like and all of this. And when I say letting go, there is the letting go of just letting go. Then there's the letting go of where you're holding on and God just has to peel those little fingers off. Anybody relate to that kind of letting go? It's like, oh, it's just a letting go. Okay, God, I let it go. I let it go. Because whatever God is asking you to let go of, he's lining up something more glorious, more beautiful. For God is able to do exceedingly abundantly above all we can ask or think or hope for. Ephesians 3:20, it was my lifetime verse. And so now I'm going out during those years of waiting to get married and I'm speaking more and I love speaking for some reason and I don't know what that means because I've got my career, but I want to be a speaker. And so one day I get invited to come in and speak for a women's conference at Oral Roberts University. And they said to me, Lynette, you know, we know you love to speak. We'd love for you to do a workshop. The women's chaplain said this, and I said, I'd love to. And she said, and we have a topic for you. And I said, great. She said, we want you to do a session on contentment in singleness. I was like, great. Oh, I'm so honored that you would ask me. And then I go home and I'm like, I don't want to talk about this subject. So I'm preparing, I'm fasting, I'm praying. I go in and do this workshop and I'm just like so not wanting to do it. And I don't know if you ever think this way, but I was like, I just don't want to do this because then I'm going to share and then it'll probably be good. And then they're going to want me to speak on this topic more. And then you're just going to keep me single. You're going to keep me single for more years, God. Because you just need me to be single. I mean, this is what I was thinking. And so sure enough, I went in and I did the workshop. I shared the road with the roses. I said, I would always end by saying, and so ladies, we're going to remember the roses. We're going to remember the roses. We're going to remember the faithfulness of God. And so all these young women loved it. And some of them were daughters of pastors. And so they told their parents about me. And so before long, I'm going and traveling just like I've dreamed. But now I'm doing singles conferences. And I mean, on the one hand, I'm like grateful, but I'm doing singles conferences. And I would get ready and I would think, but God, if I was married to my man on the road with the roses, we'd be doing marriage conferences and family. And I mean, it just did not fit with my vision. But as I would say, on the other hand, but God, who am I to define for you, King of Kings, what my voice should get to tell? Who am I, Lord? Lord, here am I. Send me, God. Send me, Lord. And year after year after year, he sent me. And I wouldn't trade it for anything because he was doing something bigger. See, letting go of how we think it should look positions us perfectly for letting God have his way, for letting him come in and reconfigure us and do something great. When I married Ron, he gave me the gift of 4 teenage boys. 4 boys on my wedding day. 4 boys and no stretch marks. That is a good deal. So I enter into stepmotherhood overnight. Any stepmoms in the audience? It's a beautiful thing. Landon, yes. I mean, it's been one of the greatest joys of my life. But the first few months, I would go to bed at night and I would be like, Lord, why did you choose me for this? This is so, I mean, Tony is like the love machine. I mean, she could take in anybody's children, whatever, and I just felt so inadequate and so unqualified and so out of my element, and there was no job description. You know, I'm used to the corporate world. There's no job description. There's no immediate feedback. There's, you know, I mean, I would cook these dinners and crockpot meals. I figured the smell would be good when they came in, and I would serve it on our wedding china, and we'd all sit around, and we'd be sitting down, and then nobody would talk. They were boys, right? And we're all kind of new, getting to, and Ron would try to talk, and I would talk, and I'd say, honey, do you think they like me? I mean, I don't even, he's like, they like you. You keep cooking like that, they like you. They really like you, Lynette. Well, the boys grew up, and it was a wonderful thing, and oh, goodness, they could not be more my sons if I birthed them myself. I adore them with every ounce of my being, but by the age of 45, I got married when I was 42. Ron said, let's give it a go, and we started to try to have our own child, and I got pregnant, and I was 45 years old, and I was pregnant, and I was flipping out. I could not believe it, and at my two-month first checkup on the day when I was going to finally tell all my friends, I went in and had my checkup, and there was no heartbeat. I remember standing in that waiting room, all these beautiful pregnant women, and I'm just shaking like a leaf, I can't even believe this, and it became a whirlwind, and the next day I had to go in for surgery, they did a D&E, and I thought, well, I'll get pregnant again right away, and two more years went by, and then I was finally, at the end of that, diagnosed with rampant endometriosis. Never knew I had it, completely wrapped around one of my tubes and all kinds of stuff, had surgery, kept believing, kept hoping. It was during that time that we found out about the issue of child sexual slavery in America, and we started an organization called Stop Child Trafficking. Some of you were involved in our walks and our runs. We did it for about 5 years, and it was really, quite honestly, my letting go of my grief and letting go of the days when I just couldn't barely get out of bed. And I said, Lord, if I can't have my own child, maybe I could go save someone else's. And it really became my offering to the Lord. And so we did Stop Child Trafficking Now. And about 3 years into it, we got a call from some of our guys that were working overseas. And they said, we've just received our youngest child that we've ever seen in this issue. She's about 5 or 6 years old. And Lynette, she looks like you. And we're wondering if you guys would want to adopt her. Well, people had been telling me maybe I should be open to adoption. I just didn't see it as part of our plan, but it just stirred in my heart, and I thought, we can do it. And so we went through a home study, and we got everything ready, and everybody was getting excited about it. Well, long story short, they couldn't ever get enough of her paperwork together to ever get her into the U.S., there was an issue with her identity and where was she from. And she, meanwhile, she bonded with the safe house mother. She didn't speak any English. And so the safe house mom decided she would adopt her. And it felt like a miscarriage all over again. Just a letting go, letting go. Okay, God, I don't know what you're doing, but I'm going to let it go. I don't know what this means. 5 years ago now, 6 years ago this summer, our third son, Jordan, was on a summer missions trip for Oral Roberts University. He's a wonderful, godly, amazing young man, and it was between his junior and senior year, and while he was over in Tanzania, Africa, he had 21 nosebleeds. We thought he had a really bad sinus infection, and he came home, and on the day before his 21st birthday, was diagnosed with stage 4 sinus cancer. A tumor the size of my fist implanted in the middle of his sinus cavity. Left school, of course, he's going into his senior year and came home, went and had surgery at UNC Chapel Hill. They were able to get 80% of the tumor. 20% was remaining on both optic nerves, and so they decided not to take it, of course, because he would have gone blind. And so they said, we're going to radiate it. Went through 71 rounds of radiation and 8 rounds of chemotherapy in our home. Believing for miracles. It's what you do, right? We're faith people. We believe. And we had prayers coming in from all over the world. And I think with the last time I was here, Jordan had just gotten through that. Went back in for surgery in December and was declared cancer-free. It was a miracle, amazing, total God thing. And went back, finished his senior year. graduated on time, won the Overcomer of the Year Award, was named Homecoming King, met the love of his life, got a fabulous job at a local bank, was just doing his vision. We were all just rejoicing and thrilled. And about then, a year and a half after that, he was home for Memorial Day weekend with Katie, his beautiful soon-to-be fiance. At 8 a.m. that morning, he and Ron went to buy the engagement ring. At 10 a.m. that morning, in a very routine, perfunctory exam, he was almost done with his two-year remission, at which point, with sinus cancer, they usually consider you to be home free for the rest of your life. And he was in one of those final exams, and they decided to do a final lung exam. And at 10 a.m. that morning, he was told that the cancer had come back. And it came back with a vengeance. It was in his lymph system. It was in his lungs. Katie walked across that exam room, and she whispered into his ear, "We will get married as soon as possible." They got married 30 days later. She never left his side. And for 9 months, they fought, and we all believed, and we did everything. We did everything. 2 brain surgeries, a health and nutrition farm for a month. I mean, we did it all. You do it all. Some of you in this room have done it all. You do it all for whatever you're believing God for. But in what will remain a great mystery in our lives, the Lord had other plans, and he took our beloved son to heaven. So that's where he lives, and we miss him every day. C.S. Lewis says that dealing with the loss of a beloved is like having an amputation. You learn to live without the limb, but you never quit missing and wishing you had it back. And that's what it's been like. So mysteriously, though, 3 months before Jordan died, I got a phone call from a friend. It was December. We had just celebrated our 9-year anniversary. And she said, "Lynette, do you still want twin baby girls?" Now, when I was going through all my fertility treatments, and I'm a big vision person, I write down all my visions, and I had written down one January in my journal, I said, "I am a double portion woman. I live in 2 cities, New York and Raleigh. I've got 4 sons, 2 careers." I was going down my list. We were fasting and praying in January, and I said, "And I will have twin baby girls. One will be named, they'll have 2 callings. One will be named Victoria Joy, and the other will be named Isabella Grace." I shared it with my prayer group, with some of my girlfriends, and we were all believing together. Well, a couple years went by, and I'm getting older, and then Jordan got sick. And all the other dreams seemed to take a back burner. But here we are now, in the throes of fighting for Jordan's life, and I get this call from my girlfriend. She said, "I've been working with a birth mom. She thought she was having a boy. She placed him for adoption. But she's going into her 9th month, and she was just told it's twin baby girls." And the minute I heard, I thought, these are Ron and Lynette's babies. Now, she said, "It's a long shot, but if you're interested, you need to get your paperwork updated really fast." Well, the paperwork I had done 3 years before for the little girl who never came to us, I called that sweet woman, that social worker, back. She had fallen in love with Ron and I. She was so sad when it didn't work out. I said, "I know it's almost Christmas and we are all so busy, but we need to get this paperwork done immediately." By 3 days later, which is a total miracle with the social services system, we had all our paperwork done. Everything was approved. It was renewed. See, that no, that letting go was a setup. Some of you, you're letting go of something right now in your life, and I'm here to tell you and promise you it's a setup. You don't know yet what it's going to look like. You don't know what God's doing, but it is a setup because God takes us from glory to glory and strength to strength. And every time we let go, we let God do something bigger. So we had one very routine conversation with this young woman. I thought, my friend Deanna, she said, "Lynette, I need you to put a paper together about your family, because if she expresses any hesitation about this family for the twin girls, I need your paperwork. I want to be able to put it right in front of her." And she's like, "So write your story." And I was like, "My story? My story? Like I had a miscarriage, and I'm thinking, I don't like my story." And she said, "Just write it. Like, put pictures of your boys, put pictures of you with your niece, you know, like show that you like children. I mean, just put it together." And so I literally sat there, ladies, and for 4 hours on a Sunday night while Ron's out watching the NFL, I am in there trying to write my story, my journey, not really feeling like it's a good one. And I'm thinking, this young woman, she's the age of my boys. She's never going to pick us. She's never going to pick us. She's going to look at this photo and say, they could be my parents. Do you ever feel like something about you is so unqualified? That there's just something that doesn't make sense? Can you imagine how Mary felt? She's like 13, 14, whatever they say in the Jewish custom, she might have been this teenager. And the angel comes to her and says, Mary, tells her the whole thing. And she says, but how can this be? How can this be? And what does the angel say to her? I love this. This is the word for someone here tonight. She says, how can this be? Because I'm a virgin. Here's what he says. And this is what the Lord's saying to you. How can this be? How can my miracle happen? The Spirit of the Lord is going to come upon you. And the power of the Almighty is going to overshadow you. And that which was spoken to you will come to pass, because nothing is impossible with God. Nothing is impossible with God. So I let it go. I let go of what I thought. I let go of what I thought could, and I wrote that little thing. And sure enough, a couple days later, she had that thing right in front of this sweet woman. And she said, I want to talk to the Lewises. And we got on the phone. We had a conversation, got no indication she was going to pick us. Now everybody's home for Christmas because Jordan is fighting for his life. So Jordan and Katie and all our other sons and their wives, their girlfriends, and we're all in the living room. Actually, it's Christmas Eve. And my friend Deanna calls and she goes, she wants to talk to you, Lynette. So we get on the phone. Ron gets on the phone. And she says, these babies are due in 3 weeks. I need to know if you can be ready because you're the family. And we were like, we can be ready. We got three. We'll be ready. And so I said to Ron, we're going to tell the boys tomorrow morning, Christmas morning. So I walked out to the garage and I found baby gifts that people had given me through the years that were supposed to be sold at a garage sale that summer until Jordan got sick. And I wrapped up those little baby gifts. And the next morning, it's 8 a.m. and I'm in my bathroom and I'm getting ready for my brunch. I'm making a brunch for everybody. I'm putting on my makeup. And I get a text. Two little baby pictures. They're here. Born at 8:08 and 8:14 a.m. on Christmas morning. Victoria Joy and Isabella Grace Lewis. And we told the boys that morning, I'm going to play the video for you tomorrow morning, first thing in the morning. I mean, it was a moment. And we flew up that evening, and by 11:30 that night on Christmas, we were in upstate New York as the snow was slowly falling. And nobody was in that hospital except a couple people and this sweet young woman. And I walked into that room, and there were those little babies in that thing. And we walked in, and we'd never met her before. And I said, how are you doing? And she said, I'm doing great. I said, are you okay? And she said, this is how it was meant to be. So for the next 2 days, while those tiny little babies, she nursed them for a couple days. And then the 2 days later, we're bundling everybody up. And I should tell you that the second day we were there, my friend Deanna, who went with us, she and I go off to Target to buy some things, right? I have nothing. I have no diapers, no car seats, nothing. I got a few gifts, but I have nothing else. And Ron is in the hotel, and he gets this text. Fraud alert, fraud alert. Someone is spending your credit card in upstate New York City. Meanwhile, they're denying my credit card at the Target. And that was me. I was loading it up because I had two brand new babies. And so we're leaving the hospital. 2 days later, a social worker, the attorneys, were signing the papers. The sweet woman's there, this young woman. And we're hugging goodbye. And she whispers in my ear, it was my great honor to carry your children. There's so much more to her story, and I don't share it publicly because it's her story, but God supernaturally intervened in the lives of these babies. Three times, supernaturally intervened in the lives of these babies because they belonged to me.
See, that young woman had to let go of the entire disruption of her life when she found out she was pregnant. But God wanted to use her crisis to bless a family. In the year when Victoria Joy and Isabella Grace would be needed because Jordan Alexander would go to heaven. See, the thing I've found in life is that God doesn't replace, but he adds. How can you ever replace a son or a child? I lost not only my son Jordan, but in many ways my daughter Katie, who married him. A year and a half ago, she married one of Jordan's very best friends. In a beautiful wedding, we were all a part of it. And right before her bridesmaids walked down the aisle, she had my three sons walk in. And it was virtually a carbon copy wedding of the wedding that she and Jordan had had the year before. Same friends, same beautiful things. But it was a mixed emotional day for all of us, as you can imagine. Happy for Katie. She'll always be my daughter. But sad for us and sad for the loss. And I've discovered in life that joy and sorrow aren't one or the other, but they coexist. So many years in my life, I thought, well, I'm just going to get through the pain part, and I'm going to get back to the joy part. But what happens in reality is that they both coexist. And as we can learn to let go, then we can embrace the joy that God wants to bring at the same time. But we expect it to be different, and so that was just such a different path, and yet now we have these twins, and you know, here I am pushing my stroller downtown New York City, having all my hot flashes, you know? And people saying, oh, are they yours? And I'm like, yes, they're mine. And they're like, wow, you know? And now I say, late in life surprise. And then they, oh, yeah. But it's just so different, ladies. It's just so different than what I thought, but better than what I imagined. See, whatever God's asking you to let go of tonight, he's getting ready to give you something better. I mean, I can't imagine my life without Victoria Joy and Isabella Grace. For such a time as this, God needs them in history now at this age. They're almost ready to turn four. And tonight on FaceTime, little Victoria's showing me her two little mosquito bites over and over, you know, see, I mean, here I am. And some days I'm just like so totally, utterly exhausted. And I'm like, now I know why people my age are grandparents and not parents. Seriously. But then I'm like, but I'm young. I'm just declaring I'm young, you know. And I mean, oh, the mysteries of God. Can you imagine Abraham and Sarah? I mean, I read this, you know, with new understanding of why she left. I mean, she left. I get it. She left. It's like hilarious, but it's crazy. See, I just declare to you that the mysteries of God that are happening in your life right now, you will not be disappointed. I've gone totally off my notes. And these poor guys up there, I've gone totally off my notes, but I felt like God wanted you to hear this. See, when we let go, and maybe this letting go thing is so fresh to me because my girls have these little microphones, frozen microphones. Let it go, let it go. No, I mean, I hear this over and over and over in my house. But it really is a constant thing of letting go. Now, letting go, here's how we think of letting go. Do you guys have the photo of, and I'm going to close here in like 2 minutes. Do you have the photo of the swimmers? Okay, this is what we think of as letting go, you know, just kind of floating around, right? Just kind of floating around. Letting go, I'm letting go. No, here's what letting go is. Next photo. This is letting go in God. The girls had these little things in a little thing this spring that my mother-in-law bought me. And they start out as larvae. They're like barely visible and they grow into worms and then they attach themselves to the thing. And you watch this thing. I've never watched this up close and personal, but then you put these little things, the cocoons on the side and all of a sudden they break free. It's phenomenal. It's one of God's amazing miracles, what happens to a butterfly. But I noticed at the bottom where you put the paper towels, there are little drops of blood. When that butterfly comes out, there's little drops of blood. Letting go in God is a bleeding thing. Maybe you felt like your heart was bleeding lately. I was telling Nancy just a couple weeks ago, I was just grieving again about Jordan and just Katie and just the way it's gone and just missing her so much. And she's not gone, but it's different. Just wanting it to be what she and I wanted it to be. She called me her Naomi, and she was like my Ruth, and we just knew from the beginning that we belonged together, and why couldn't we stay together? Why couldn't our marriages work out the way we thought? And, you know, when I married Ron, I just knew, you know, what one of my sons wants to go to his parents' wedding. You know, you don't want to do that. You don't want to have a stepmom. You don't. But yet, oh, goodness. The day the twins came, we were all bawling like babies. We're standing in our kitchen, and we're just, like, shocked, and our eyes are red, and we're getting the twins. And the boys had walked through my miscarriage phase, and we're all just, you know, fighting together for Jordan, and we're just bonded like a family, like a true family. And Nathan's like, here we are, you know, oh, these twins, and they come on Christmas morning. He's like, we're just like living a cheesy Hallmark movie here. It's like, but it's weird, and it's wonderful. When my youngest son, John Luke, was courting his beautiful now wife, Libby, his future father-in-law, Tom, was grilling John Luke about dating his daughter. And he said, well, talk to me about your parents' divorce. And how did that affect you? And John Luke said, well, it was the hardest thing, but it sure worked out great for me. I wouldn't have Lynette. I would have never gone to Oral Roberts University. I would have never met your daughter. And I would have never had my sisters, the twins. See, what God teaches, some of you are aching over your children right now because they're going through some stuff that you wish you could change. That's painful as a parent when you just want to deliver them out of the pain. But I'm here to promise you that God is going to redeem it all. He's making them strong. He's making them sure. He's making them resilient. Someone here, you've got, your child isn't even in fellowship with you right now, and you wonder what the heck is going on with this child. God has got your child in the palm of his hand. He whose eye is on the sparrow is watching your child and caring for that child. And oh, the things that I wish I could have done different, but I wouldn't change for anything. God's busy. God's doing it. God wants to take you higher. He wants to do more. We're going to close with something very simple, but it's something I did at one of my women's conferences a few years back, and it was very powerful. And so I want to read you this passage out of Joshua. Joshua 4. I think we have it on the screen. Yes. So Joshua had just led the children of Israel through the Jordan River. I love that name, the Jordan River. And they're walking through, and he told them, the priests, that when they came up out of the river carrying the Ark of the Covenant, they were also supposed to bring stones with them out of the river. And this is what he says. In verse 20, and Joshua set up at Gilgal the 12 stones they had taken out of the Jordan. He said to the Israelites, in the future, when your descendants ask their parents, what do these stones mean? Tell them, Israel crossed the Jordan on dry ground. For the Lord your God dried up the Jordan before you until you had crossed over. The Lord your God did to the Jordan what he had done to the Red Sea, when he dried it up before us until we had crossed over. He did this so that all the peoples of the earth might know that the hand of the Lord is powerful, and so that you might always fear the Lord your God. What we're going to do right now, ladies, is we're just going to take turns coming up, and we've got some rocks here and some rocks here. And what I'm going to ask you to do is take a pen and take a rock. And I want you to think tonight about what it is that maybe the Holy Spirit tonight is asking you to let go of. Something very specific. What do you need to let go of tonight? Because what we're going to do with our rocks is we write that thing we're going to let go of. Is when we let go of something in God, it becomes a monument. It becomes an altar of sacrifice. It becomes a place where we know the glory of God can dwell. And therefore, all the people in our lives say, God did this through his power. He did this that people would know his power. So I just want, as our beautiful musician plays, for you to just take time, come up, grab a rock, write on your rock what it is that God wants you to let go of tonight. It might be more than one thing, anything in your life that you just want to let go of and let God do something more. And when you get done with your rocks, just lay them here in the front altar. If you want to take a moment and just pray as you put your rock down and just get with the Lord, whatever you feel like doing, we're going to take some minutes here just to get with God. Let him just finish what he's doing in your heart and your spirit and your soul. This is going to be the altar of the Lord. I hope you'll make use of it for what God wants to do in your heart in these final moments this evening.